Attention Austin guitar players and bass players. Are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you, gang. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery, and you can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I've been talking about Jason for years. Why is that? Because I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years. Not only does he do the best job, but he has the best prices and the fastest service in town. Again, find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Not only is he doing an amazing job repairing and setting up guitars, he is now building guitars. That's right. He built me an SG Junior, which I have, and it sounds amazing. It feels great. It's the very first SG Junior he ever built. I've got a J. Scott Luthery SG Junior. You can go see him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Get a guitar built. Get your guitars fixed. Get them set up. It's time, man. They've been hanging on the wall all through COVID. Now it's time to get them out, get them fixed, and get out there and play. J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Let's get down. Hey, gang, it's Johnny. I just want to take a second to talk to you guys about engagement. Right now, you're listening to the show, and I'm not sure exactly what platform you're listening to it on. But whatever platform you're listening to it on, you can subscribe to it and get an alert every time a new show drops, usually every Tuesday and every Friday. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Whatever platform you're listening on, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, any platform, you can subscribe to it. And if you can leave a comment, leave a star, share it on your social media, if it's something that you like, please do that. We encourage you to do that. And also, as far as social media goes, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. Also, you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Please do. You'll see photos of me with guests that have been on the show. Anyway, all I want to say is, you like a show, share it, use the hashtag How Did I Get Here Pod. We'll give you a shout out. Thank you so much for listening to the show and engage. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a really nice weekend, man, you guys. Had a great weekend, actually. Busy weekend. I went to Houston last Wednesday to spend time with my family before my Skyrocket show on Friday. That was great, getting to see them, getting to be with my grandma and my aunts and my cousin Emily a bit, and all the dogs. They all have such a good time together. So Friday, Skyrocket played at Last Concert Cafe in Houston, and it was sold out, and that place is huge. It's outside. It was hot. It was sweaty. We were loud and a little bit out of control. I feel like the energy coming from the audience to the stage that night, that we had to kind of like take in that energy, double it, and send it back, right? It was a little chaotic, but it was really fun. It was a little out of control. That's what it felt like, a little out of control. What's going on? What's happening? Things are really loud. It was so loud. I don't think we've ever been that loud. And when a 7-person band is loud, it is fucking loud, dude. Seriously. I refer to you guys, the audience, as dude. So then that was a great show. Great time. I want to thank everyone that came out. Last Concert Cafe staff is super nice. Then we came back to Austin on Saturday to play at 310 Austin City Limits Live. Another packed show. Great show. Once again, man, Austin, you guys came out in full force. You know, it's hard to get in Houston. It's a different thing. They don't have everybody playing all over the place every single night of the week, right? So when we play there, it's easy to get a bunch of people in a room. This time, we got back to Austin, got them in a room. People were freaking out. The energy, once again, coming back at us, and we were sending it back to them. My friend Sarah was at the show, and she was in the front, and she was making a lot of faces that made me laugh. There was a lot of joking on stage. There was a lot of... there was one song where I said something and my friend Benjamin said something and I could not, I was like trying to sing, but I was laughing and it was making me laugh. I didn't mean to do it, but it was very, very funny. It was a fun weekend all around. Went and had coffee with a friend of mine Sunday morning at Cosmic. I always forget how much I love Cosmic coffee and beer. Get out there. You know, if you haven't been there, if you don't go there, it's in South Austin. If you live in Austin, all right. Yeah, it was a great weekend all around. It was nice. It was nice to play those shows. It was nice to get out there. I felt very, very comfortable on stage. I've been feeling a little bit weird. I think that happens. You go through your times where you're not as like focused and together and connected while you're playing. And I feel like I've gotten back to that. And that's been a great thing. And I'm very, very grateful for it, because when you feel like you're like, what's going on with me? You know, you're like, am I losing my edge? But you don't. It comes back. I learned that this weekend and I feel great about stuff. Gang, I want to let you know that, in the past years, every time there's like a 100th episode, like episode 400, episode 500, we do a live episode. We would do a live episode with a bunch of guests and do it all up. 2020, obviously, we couldn't do that. Last year, we tried to do it, but then that the Delta took over and we had to sort of like not do it. And so this year, we're not doing it either, which is a bummer. I am making a playlist of the music of the last 100 episodes on Spotify, which I'll put a link to on our Facebook page. And I actually do have a very, very special show for episode 1200. Should I tell you what it is, or should I keep you in suspense? Dude, I'm going to tell you what it is. Legendary bass player Rudy Sarzo is my guest for episode 1200. Yeah, if you don't know who Rudy is, look him up. He played with Ozzy Osbourne in the biggest time, or, you know, in the Randy Rhoads era. He was in Quiet Riot when Mental Health came out and they were doing Bang Your Head, Mental Health Will Drive You Mad, and Come On, Feel the Noise. He was in Whitesnake when they did Here I Go Again, all that stuff. So, and it went on to play with people like Dio, Blue Oyster Cult, and Quiet Riot's back together. And he's out there touring. He wrote this beautiful book called Off the Rails, which is basically his story of his time on tour with Ozzy Osbourne and with his best friend, Randy Rhoads, until his untimely death in a plane crash right in front of him, which is a pretty intense thing. But anyway, we have an amazing conversation, and that will be out on Friday. Okay, I'm very excited about that. Rudy is a big hero of mine. We're both Cuban, and that was an exciting thing. There's not a lot of Cubans in rock, but we're both Cuban guys. We both love dogs, and we love rock and roll. So it was a great two-hour conversation with the amazing Rudy Sarzo. Look for that on Friday for episode 1200. Today, for episode 1199, I have an amazing show for you today, gang. I do. Singer-songwriter, a guy that's referred to as the Texas Springsteen, Jonathan Terrell, is my guest on the show today. He has a brand new EP coming out on September 9th. It's called A Couple, Two, Three, on Range Music. That's distributed by Virgin. Now, he's a great couple years. He's been on tour with this band, Midland, which I accidentally referred to as Midlake while we were talking. I did not mean to do that, but I think people do that a lot. Hopefully, it'll be overlooked. He's been touring with Midland. He was actually playing in the band a little bit, but then also now opening for them as well. His EP, A Couple, Two, Three, is gorgeous. It was produced by Bo Bedford from the Texas Gentlemen up in Dallas. These songs are fantastic. Some of them are co-writes. You'll hear the song Texas, which is a fantastic, fantastic song that you should really listen to the words, because he's really saying something in the song. You know, something you might not be hearing just over, you know, when you're overhearing it. Listen, Jonathan Terrell, amazing songwriter. Not in the Face was his rock band. He was playing a lot around town. That's when I first met him and first had him on the show. I really enjoyed that. But I talked to him about one night going with my friend Jazz Mills and to see him play at like Clive Bar or something on Rainy Street here in Austin on like a Monday night or something. And seeing some people play, and then he got up and played. And I was so moved by his songs in a different way than I was from Not in the Face. Was like a loud rock band. It was cacophonous. You don't know what's going on lyrically while you're watching them play usually. But seeing him play by himself on a stage and hearing these songs and his lyrics and his stories, just absolutely blown away. He's a fantastic dude. I always love talking to him. Always love talking to him. Always love running into him. He is also got like he's got like one of the best stage personas of anyone I've ever met. That's the truth. He really does. He's huge on stage. Huge. Jonathan Terrell, if you live in Austin, you want to see him play, he's playing at Sagebrush on October 10th. Get out there and check him out. If you want to find out if he's coming to a town near you on tour, go to jonathanterrellmusic.com and look up his tour dates. Great video for the song Better For You, which was produced by Shaky Graves. And it was a self-directed video. Gorgeous video. Get out there and check it out. Jonathan Terrell Music. See if he's coming to a town near you. A Couple, Two, Three, drops September 9th, but he does have some singles out. You'll hear one of them right now called Texas. All right, so this is me and Jonathan Terrell chatting it up. Let's get down.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could have it all. Where would you put it? Unless you got room to roam. Go see the world and breeze right through it.
Also, I had COVID a couple weeks ago, so I know people are like trying to stay away from. I mean, I'm fine now, but it's going around again.
Yeah. It really is. I was nervous about it. We went to a, you know, did a couple shows and been to a couple shows, and we're just like, roll the dice. When, you know, still wearing a mask on a plane just in case, but you know, for like the outdoor stuff, has been okay. But,
Has you been on tour with Midlake for a while now, right?
Midland.
Midland. Sorry.
Two different bands.
Two different bands. I know. I bet they get that a lot. Both bands get that a lot.
I think so. Yeah. But I will say, I know like Midland is a big fan of Midlake.
Okay. Well, that works.
Yeah.
You're both playing in the band and opening for them.
Well, I was filling in for one of the members for about 5 months, and he's back now. Okay. He had to take a little break for some health issues, and so he's back, and so now I'm just opening for them. I'll jump up with them for a couple songs here and there, but you know.
How? What were you doing with them? Like,
I was playing. Yeah, so like there's like a three. You know, there's like three main guys. And one of the dudes had a break. So I was mostly, you know, singing harmonies and playing rhythm guitar. And then, you know, they'd give me a song to sing every night. And then I was opening up acoustic for them, you know.
This is
a cool run.
It's all so great, though. And you're going to go to Europe with them? Is that right?
We were there in May.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I'm going back to England for a festival next week.
Oh, you are?
On my own.
Oh, fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Have you been there before? So,
this will be my fifth time.
Oh, that's great.
Time to play over there, yeah.
Do you notice like you're really moving the needle? Like each time you go back, there's more people coming and stuff, or?
Oh, for sure. And especially after the that last Midland run we did, you know, we got to play some pretty big shows in UK. So hopefully that kind of, you know, spurs little things here and there. But yeah, I've had some pretty good support over there, some good radio play, and like got a great little crew of folks that always come out and, you know, hang out with me and stuff. So it's pretty sweet.
That's awesome, man. That is so awesome. I'm so happy for you. And these records, like that Westwood record, that was great. We never got to talk about that. But that record, just like I went back and listened to it, I guess a couple days ago. And it was just so, you're such a great songwriter. You really are, man. Like you really like your, there's something, I know that there's a lot of Springsteen that gets thrown around a lot, and I get that too, but to me there's like this Dwight Yoakam element, and I can't remember what song it was. Maybe Place Out Back. There's one song, you ever listen to Bodines?
I know of them, but I'm not sure if I know any of their songs. But yeah. I've heard of them, I've heard of the band for sure.
That's awesome. That's one of the songs, I can't remember exactly which, might have been Place Out Back. That I thought was, I was like, man, I wonder, like, this sounds like a song he could have written with that guy, Kurt. Has that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was a total oddball for the album. You know, I just kind of, just wrote it in the garage one morning and just kind of cracked myself up, you know, just giggling about it. But
let me ask you this. What's with the title of the new record is A Couple, Two, Three?
Mm-hmm.
What is?
So there's a lot. There's a line on the song Place Out Back that says you pour the drinks, maybe a couple, two, three.
Okay. All right.
So it's, you know, it's just kind of like a, it's honestly kind of like a roundabout number. You know, this EP was kind of specifically designed for, you know, kind of almost to kind of like, what would an EP be like if we had all singles, You know, if we were like, if we imagined all the songs were singles, what would that look like? And, you know, so it was just kind of like a, yeah, it was like a singles party, you know? So it was just a couple, two, three songs, a couple, two, three drinks, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so it was more of like a, you know, an experiment than anything, you know?
Yeah. You did all of the record but one song with Bo Bedford, right?
No, I did all the new EP with Bo, but I did Westward with Stuart Sykes.
Okay. Well, what's the song Better For You did with Shaky, right? Or is he just in the video?
No, he produced the video.
Oh, okay. The way it reads is it looks like he produced the song. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he produced the video, but Bo produced the song, and we actually co-wrote that one together.
Oh, you
Bo
did?
Bo and I.
What a beautiful song. What a gorgeous video.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'd finished that book, the Larry McMurtry Last Picture Show, and I'd watched that movie that they filmed in the 70s, and they filmed it like totally film noir, and I was just like really captivated by that. I was like, I'd love to do a film noir, you know, video. So that's kind of where that came from, was that Larry McMurtry book.
That's awesome, man. I'm a huge Peter Bogdanovich fan.
Cool.
Who did the movie?
Yeah. It's wild to see those actors so young too.
I know.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, Sybil Shepherd, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think do you know the story about that? Like Bogdanovich's ex-wife was like his producing partner, and she saw Sybil Shepherd on the front of the magazine and knew that was JC, and like insisted that she be in the movie, and then he ended up leaving her for Sybil Shepherd.
I did hear about that, and that's fucking wild. I can imagine that she might have kicked herself for that. But at the same time, you know, it's like
she couldn't blame him either.
You know,
yeah,
Sybil Shepherd. You know,
yeah. I know that you probably talked about this a lot because it's the story of the song. But the song I know, I didn't realize. Like, then that's how you first saw your fiancé at the Paul Simon.
And if I talked about it a lot, that means I got my answers down pat.
Oh, good. Well, go ahead.
That is true. I did see her running down the aisle to her seat with two giant cups of beer, like, you know, just sprinting. And I literally caught her silhouette in between, the stage lights. And I was just so moved that I started writing that song in my seat at the show. And then I realized I was like on my phone at a Paul Simon show, like an asshole.
Yeah.
And so I stepped in the hallway to finish it.
Yeah.
And then I met her about a year later and basically stopped talking to all my girlfriends. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing. We got engaged this past New Year's Eve, and
congratulations,
man. We just bought a little place out in Lockhart. Thanks, man. So we moved out to Lockhart, and it's been trucking.
That's great, man. I mean, you've been gone for a while too since you got engaged, right? Did she get to come out on the road a bit?
She could come. She'd come out for some of the big shows, but I mean, she works. She works a big girl job, and she don't need me.
Right.
She just likes me having me around. She'll come out to like the big shows. We're doing Red Rocks in October. She's gonna come out for that one.
Oh, that's killer, man.
Yeah, we did two nights at Whitewater Amphitheater.
I saw
that. Came out for both those shows.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting.
She likes it, and yeah, it's pretty fun for both of us to kind of like experience these bigger steps together, you know, and and just know that, like, you know, you're it's all the new things that are coming in. You get to like do it with your partner, you know, and I mean, you know me, you know, I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've both been at this for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's finally feels like it's the needle's moving a little bit, and you know, it's nice to see some payoff with you know, somebody, you know, that you love on your side, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man.
It's cool to experience that.
Yeah. So what is Range Music? That's a label, and they're distributed through Virgin. Is that right?
Yeah. Range is a label group. And they also do a management. And, so the guy that owns Range and runs it also manages, Midland and Wale, and I think like Jack Harlow and stuff. And so, I was getting ready to put out that song Texas independently last year. And, he's always been a great like soundboard for me. And, you know, he's always been accessible for me to like, hey, I've got an idea, or do you think this is totally bullshit, or do you think this is cool? You know, he's always been, you know, really receptive with my ideas. And so, you know, we're getting ready to put that song out. And my friend Jess, actually from Midland, called him and was like, he's about to put this song out independently. And Jess and I co-wrote that song. And he was like, if something doesn't happen with the song, you guys are out of your mind. So that was kind of where it all started, was that song Texas.
Yeah. It's a great song too.
But I mean, thank you, man. I wasn't planning on, I felt like I had a good little streak of releasing some independent songs, you know, with Westward and things like that. I felt like I got some good recognition through like Rolling Stone and American Songwriter, and I was on some radars for it. So I was totally prepared to like just keep plugging away and putting music out on my own. But I think, you know, with all the help that they've, you know, I'm friends with a lot of artists that they have on this label, and just watching them, you know, really kind of dig in and help my friends has been like amazing. And I've seen giant steps for those people, involved. So I felt really comfortable like going into business with these guys and partnering up with Range, because it was just, you know, we have so many mutual and close friends that they're tied into their projects, and their projects are really taking off,
yeah,
you know, and a lot of that has to do with Range, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's interesting because it seems like, at this time, are you familiar with like Space Flight Records here in town?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like 9 Mile Records, and there's this sure. sort of like, it seems like there's like a new label movement. Don't you kind of feel that?
Right. Well, I do, because I mean, I think that like all the artists have really finally caught on and gone like, okay, a 360 deal fucks the band, like it'll fuck them, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of labels are having to like pivot, because that was all that they're offering in the past is like, you know, a 360 deal. It's like they get part of everything forever,
everything,
and merch and shows,
yeah, everything.
And it's just like, yeah. And so I think that like the labels have definitely pivoted, and they're trying to like, you know, they're not trying to like offer the bands, you know, or the artists something that's going to like hurt them, you know. But then you have to think about like what the trade-off is too.
Right, exactly. You know, exactly.
It's like, you know, so you're immediately, you know, things become more accessible that you can't really get on your own. There's almost like a kind of a moat around some of these connections. That
exactly.
Unless you have some kind of clearance, you can't really get past.
Right.
You know,
the gatekeepers.
You get to see.
Yeah.
The gatekeepers, indeed. Yeah. You know, and so I think you know, with Range and stuff, they've been, you know, they definitely have amazing connections and have been able to put me in touch with great people that have like really, you know, only wanted, you know, my projects to excel, which is great.
You know, what I was going to point out about that is it kind of seems like with this new wave of new labels that have sprouted up over the last 5 to 10 years, that that no one's going to end up with the checking account of David Geffen anymore, right?
Right.
That's starting a label.
Yeah.
So it seems like it is so much about passion and music. You know, kind of in the way that Sub Pop started off and just all any kind of label, that Rough Trade, any of those,
sure.
You know. I find that to be like a yeah. really inspiring and hopeful thing for the future, because it seems like it's just really been like a mess for the last 15 years or yeah. even longer. Yeah.
Well, I know the guys at 9 Mile, and I know Brett Orison over at Spaceflight.
Yeah.
And those guys have the artist's best fucking intentions in
totally.
Mind. But above all, they're like huge fans of music. Brett
Huge.
Has always been, you know,
right.
a big supporter. And, you know, we'd even kind of briefly, you know, spoke about doing something with Spaceflight. And, you know, it was, you know, Brett is just like, I think he's really putting a stamp on, you know, pushing the music to a higher place in this town.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
You know,
and hopefully the world too, you know.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be, you know, Austin's the live music capital of the world, but we're not the, you know, live music business capital of anything.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, any kind of help we can, you know, get as an
yeah.
artist community is like,
yeah.
is so amazing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you, were there other labels sniffing around? Because that whole, the whole thing about like the, like when... I had a deal that was, I was signed to a label that was owned by Lars Ulrich, and it was a subsidiary of Elektra Records, but it was in the 90s, late 90s. Mm. So it wasn't like no one gave us $1 million, but they gave us money to do our thing. And it wasn't, it was, you know, it was like 3 or 4 years before the 360 deal had been invented, where you still like, you know, you had all these ways of making money. So, with a label like how you handled it with Range Music, did you make this record and then they just kind of license it from you? Is that what the new sort of model is?
I think it's different for everybody.
It is, yeah.
You know, I personally don't know what the other artists on the label, what their deals look like.
Right, right.
You know, so I can't really speak for them. But you know, this one's, you know, we're starting off with an EP and
right.
we're going to see how it goes.
But did you have the EP recorded before you?
I had a few songs
okay.
recorded, but you know, but like, you know, I was planning on putting, you know, Better For You out with like Highway and Vagabond and Texas as like a little 4-song EP.
Okay.
So what we did, we went back in the studio and recorded a few more songs.
Okay.
But I think, you know, when I put that song Highway out, that one got picked up on like a ton of editorial playlists. And that's when I kind of started having, a lot of management sniffing around. It wasn't so many labels, but it was like all of a sudden, like I was definitely fielding phone calls from, you know, dozens of, you know, managers that were interested in what I was doing or really like the song and really like the, you know, the visual approach I was shooting for.
Right, right.
And I kind of was just like, no, I think I'm good. I'm doing this full time. I'm a full time musician. I'm full time. Like, you know, I don't have any fear of sitting down and emailing people for 3 days and getting my tour together and, you know, working on stuff myself. I don't, you know, I've been doing this since I moved here in 2005. It's like, that's kind of what you do, you know?
So you book all your stuff yourself too, or do you have a booking agent?
I was. But then, you know, once I got the deal with Range, then, you know, I reached out to a friend of mine that was a manager that had like expressed interest in this project and was just like, hey man, I've got some contracts coming up that I don't really feel comfortable like negotiating by myself. And so that's kind of how I started working with Teamwork Management.
Awesome.
And then since the first single started coming out, I started working with UTA for booking, Brett Sliba and Buster Phillips.
That's great, man.
So it's cool. They got some great, great artists on their roster, and they've been, I've got a bunch of support dates with Midland. I'm doing some stuff with William Clark Green, and got a couple shows that haven't been announced yet, but so stay tuned. They're very, very cool.
Excellent, man.
I think that's the one thing that Austin really brings to the table is, like, their artists, like, fucking hustle. And it's just like, there's no business here and there's no infrastructure. So it doesn't give you the artist any other choice but to wake up in the morning and crack the laptop and start writing,
I didn't mean to cut you off, but this is something that I talk to a lot of people about, because I've been a part of this music scene since like 1984, right? And then I've been here consistently since 91. And there have been, in that time, like, Arista moved here and opened an office and opened an actual imprint label called Arista Austin.
Sure.
And I want to say
New West was here for a while.
New West was here for a while. RCA, BMG opened a branch here. That signed Kevin Russell's band back in the 90s, whatever. I can't remember the name of the
Gourds.
The Gourds, yeah.
Yeah.
So there has been that stuff, and it hasn't worked out, and it's had to go away. But then, and tell me if you agree with this, my argument for it has always been, like, I kind of feel like, not that this is so much a farm club league, but it's a good place to come and work your shit out and figure out who you are before the industry sees you and blows you off because you're not good enough yet. You know what I mean? It's like, you can sit here and get your shit together. When the time is right, like you go out to the rest of the world, and that's where the business is. And you just end up living here in Lockhart.
Yeah. I mean, but you look at other towns, and it's like, a lot of things I see, and I can't speak for, because I know a lot of, like, really hardworking musicians in these towns.
Right.
But I mean, as far as, like, sometimes it's more business than it is, like, about the song. It's like, oh, well, they kind of play guitar. Let's set them up with, like, three hit writers, because this person has, like, a million TikTok followers for, like, showing off their outfits.
Right, right.
And, dressing up like, a cowboy or a cowgirl or whatever. It's like, so some of it's just kind of, like, numbers driven. And then they're like, well, let's just get in there while you can, But I've even talked with some friends of mine in management that are like, when they're signing these, like, TikTok stars, it's kind of these flash in the pan deal. They put them on a tour and they have no idea how to act. They have no idea about tour etiquette or how to, like, pace out a run or, like, how to not spend the money or how to spend the money correctly on the road to make sure everybody's taken care of.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's just kind of like, it's a castle built on sand, if you will, at some point. And I mean, I think that with the stuff I'm doing right now, I've built a very sturdy base and, put in, 16 years of time in Austin, cutting my teeth, and they're fucking sharp, baby.
Yeah.
So, like, let's go. It's a good time. It's a good time to get it going. And, I really believe in the songs that we're putting out, and, like, even the songs that are, yet to be recorded are just some of the best stuff I've ever written or had my hands involved in. And so, I mean, I feel really strongly about that.
That's great, man. And so you co-wrote some of these songs. Do you do, like, a lot of co-writing? Because I know there's people I know that have written with you. I think so.
I don't do a lot of co-writing. I'm, like, really particular, especially on who I'm writing with for my projects.
Right.
Like, I've written with a lot of people, but it's usually not stuff that I'm planning on cutting for my albums or whatever.
So and, in essence, they called you to help them with their song or for a song for them a third party.
Sometimes, or sometimes it's just like, hey, we should get together in a room. Like, I like hanging out with you. I like your music and we should write a song together.
Right.
And let's see. And if it's something great, then cool. But if it's not, maybe it'll like, you know, check a box for us or like, you know, get us in a room and, you know, now we're, you know, better friends or we have,
yeah.
You know, we broke down that communication barrier and, you know,
that's my favorite, you know, my favorite just, aspect of co-writing is that whole like,
yeah,
friendship aspect of
but,
it.
Yeah. And it's cool, but I mean, I've been to Nashville and been the, like, you know, three writes in a day and you're in an office with like three guys that you don't know. And like, maybe you're vibing with one guy, but you're not like vibing with the other guys or like, you know, or it's just, or, you know, I've also been in a room where, you know, I just thought the song that was being written was dog shit. Like, and I didn't feel comfortable contributing. So I'm just like, I'm trying to like throw any line I can, but it was, you know, everything was
can I ask you a question?
You know, it was turning into like a bro country. I was like,
right.
I just don't, that's not my wheelhouse.
Right. Right.
And that's not how I like communicate, naturally. So, yeah.
Can I ask you a question as a songwriter in that situation, just really fast, because I've been in a situation with people that have asked me to come write a song with them. That's terrible. But you still got to throw shit out there because you're sitting in the room, right? So you have two choices.
You do.
You either try to lift the song and put in something that's something twist or some kind of thing, or you go to their bro level. You know what I mean? What's your instinct in those situations?
I mean, you're expected to contribute something. So, right. I mean, you know, but I mean, I've also been in rooms where we just thought the song, like, we're like, we got halfway through the song. We're like, I don't think this song's really hitting it. Like, it's not a song I would listen to. And everybody was like, yeah, let's look, everybody take your notes home. If somebody wants to DM us with a note or whatever, then great. Yeah. If not, then like, you know, we went through the motions and I mean, you don't, it's not like you go to an office and write three hit songs in a day.
Right.
You write, you know, two or three songs a day for a year and maybe one or two of those songs will ever get heard.
Right. Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
So who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you cross your fingers for greatness, but, you know,
yeah,
you got to uncross them. Grab the door handle so you can get out of there.
Are you a daily writer? Are you like a wake up and write songs every day guy?
No, not at all. I keep a lot of notes and I keep, you know, I'm depending on like what's happening in my life. Like, you know, I've been on the road a lot and sometimes it's not a really great, you know, place to write in an airport or like on a bus with 13 people and, or, you know, you don't have a lot of quiet time or when you get home, it's kind of like, I've been gone for 3 weeks and, you know, I need to like hang with my lady and turn my phone off.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, there's other areas that you have to like put the work in and also fill, you know, that, that emotional void of, you know, what you've been missing and what you're also putting the people through that you love while you're out on the road by being absent, you know? Yeah.
Is that a new way of thinking for you? Like now that you're quote unquote settling down or in that way, like you're thinking of others, because to me, it's funny. Cause I was talking to Jeremy Nail earlier and I told him that you were coming over and he said to say hi, but we were like, man, that guy's just such a rock star. You know what I mean? And I know that in order to push the needle forward, it takes a lot of being yourself all the time, the self that you sell to people, you know what I mean? And that's probably not the same guy that hangs out in the living room of his house with his wife. So, I mean, is that something that you've started thinking of consciously since you met your lady and got engaged?
I mean, I think that's something I've I think I've always been aware of like any relationship I was in or any friends that I, like even with my family or my parents of like, you know, taking the time to call them and check in and like, you know, that's always something that's been important. But you know, I think like, you know, the live show aspect is like, I don't feel when I'm like at the grocery store, I don't feel like a rock star at all, but like, you know, I'd say that like, I had to learn how to elevate my show, and that means stepping into different shoes. And if the shoes I step into are like a character of somebody that is going to like raise the bar at the show, is going to get the crowd involved, is going to get people hype. It can't be the same guy at the grocery store going like, ah, peaches are on sale. You know, it's got to be somebody that's going to, you know, like really move some weight around, you know? And so I had to overcome a lot of like insecurities to find that. But I will say, you know, one thing, you know, that I brought back to, you know, me playing country music was after spending 6 years on the road with Not the Face, you know, I was able to like live in another world as a character in that band, and a character that was larger than life, and a character that could get away with doing wild shit on stage.
Yeah.
And it was all for the better of the show.
Yeah.
And like being able to bring that element back into like, you know, a country or Americana setting.
Yeah.
I think really, you know, helps me because I'm not, you know, before I was in Not the Face, I was just a songwriter standing there playing 5-6 minute songs going, how come you guys aren't into the sixth verse? What happened? You know, and it's like, I'm like, why guys, how did I lose you 4 minutes into the song? We still got 2 more minutes to go, you know? And I've had to like figure out how to like streamline that and be aware of the crowd's participation and like how much I'm asking of the audience and like, you know, almost catering to them a little bit more of taking care of them. So in return, they can take care of me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about trying to be a popular artist is that you've got to make music people want to hear.
You know, I don't think I did that for a little while.
Well, I missed that time. I remember seeing you seeing Not in the Face a few times and just being like blown away by you and all that stuff. And then one night, Jazz Mills called me up and was like, it was like a weeknight or something. Hey, a couple of people are playing. I can't remember where it was. It was on a porch in Rainy Street. I remember that. But you got up.
And probably Blackheart.
Maybe it was Blackheart, but you got up and played, I don't know, 5 songs or something. But this was like a whole new, like, it was just you doing your thing by yourself and a different set of songs. And I was so blown away that here was this guy that can have both those sides to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you, party boy lead singer of a fucking rock band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really blown away by that. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I mean, and you know, that element, you know, lives in me always. You know, and it definitely comes out when it's time to hit the gas, you know, for sure. But I think that like, in order for me to be comfortable with that, you know, living and like creating something that's going that fast, it's like, I've got to also be comfortable with like talking to myself and understanding myself of going, understanding that we're making this character and we're going to live inside of, you know, and I've got to be comfortable in my own space of writing in order to control that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I know that you were opening by yourself solo acoustic for Midland.
Mm-hmm.
You're going, when you go to the UK to play the festivals next week, are you doing them by yourself as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Are you going to be able to do like some band touring? Do you have a band that you play with sometimes here in town when it makes sense?
I do. I do have a band, and we have some shows. I believe we're playing October 1st at Sage Rush with the full band.
Cool.
But I haven't played in town in like 6 months, or probably longer, just because I've been on the road.
Right.
But you know, there's a bit of a strategy behind it too. It's like, you know, I can go out and do these support dates
right.
solo,
exactly,
in these bigger towns and like play for thousands of people a night, you know, in these markets that we're planning on going back to with the band.
Right.
So it's right now it's like we'll hit them, you know, when I don't have, you know, I wouldn't be able to go there and headline a show right now.
Right.
You know,
right.
But like once you hit them a couple times
right.
and then you go back with the band, then, you know, we're just kind of laying some more foundation this year. So that was kind of the general idea. This year was to like, do as many support dates solo as I possibly could while releasing music. And then when the EP's out and we're ready to do a headliner tour, that we have some kind of foundation built already. You know?
Right. Yeah, man. And I don't think people really understand, like the average person, I don't think understands the cost of touring, you know?
No. I mean, also paying, you know, paying four other adults to be on
the
band with you.
Yeah.
When they have rent and bills and
exactly.
you know, lovers and things like that, things that they need to take care of at home. That money goes quick.
Well, I remember like all I ever wanted in like the early time in the 80s and early 90s of playing was like, oh man, just if we could get opening for like some band and go out on tour. And then your friend like Ian Moore opened for the Stones. And I think it paid $400.
Yeah.
And then my friends
support slots are notoriously low, but
yeah. My friends Push Monkey went on tour with Kiss, like when they got their makeup back on, and that was $250 a night.
Yeah. Not in the Face did a lot of tours that was $250 a night.
Yeah.
A lot of tours. And it's still that way sometimes, you know? It really is. But I mean, but also it's kind of like, you know, I started tie-dyeing a lot of my merch and like doing things that are like super personal for my merch store,
right?
You know, that I bring out, and it's like, you can get this shirt in person and I hand dye this.
Exactly right.
There's 40 shirts. They're all 100% different.
Yeah.
You know, or like bands that I go out with, I do photography as well. And so it's like, it's an option of like, hey, I'm going to shoot the tour. And if you want to, you know, if you want these pictures in a Dropbox at the end of the tour, then it's this much.
Yeah.
Cool. But if not, I'm still going to shoot the tour, you know?
I totally forgot. I follow your photography Instagram page.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're fucking great.
So,
man.
I mean, thanks, man. It's just, you know, and just little small hustles that, you know, like I'm, you know, got some DJ residencies coming up, and it's just like when I can't play in town and I can't be on tour, then I can go spin disco music all night long and, you know, and make a little bit of scratch during the week.
Yeah.
So it's just, but also it just keeps my brain busy and keeps me involved in something artistic and keeps my hands on something, that feel like it's greasing the wheels
right.
for the trajectory that I'm on, you know.
Right.
It's not like I don't want to go and work a warehouse job or
right.
like start bartending again, because then it's just I don't feel like it's I feel like that would be counterintuitive to like what I'm trying to do
right.
you know every
right.
day.
Yeah.
So and I mean I bartended for a long time and
you
I worked
did.
Some factory jobs. So
yeah.
Yeah. So
Do you do Europe as well as UK? Like, do you go into the EU?
Yeah, I've toured Europe 4 times.
Yeah.
Primarily France. France has been one of my bigger markets that I've been to, and I had a record that came out on a psych label in France, and so they brought me over a few times for acoustic tours, and they're great.
Yeah. Man,
I remember the guy goes, I don't know what you say, but the vibe is cool. I was like, great. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way that those the way that they France, some of the Scandinavian countries, Spain, how they get American music in a way that Americans don't even get. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I had this guy explain it to me that like totally blew my mind, and that conversation went very heavy handed into the making of the Westward album.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, he said, you know, here in France, I was in La Rochelle and I was talking with this guy in an alley after the show and they were loading out, and he was like, you know, we have thousands of years of art and culture and history in Europe. But the one thing that we cannot replicate or even get close to replicating is the idea of the American West. And he's like, that is the most foreign thing,
right,
in that we could ever imagine,
right,
of cowboys and rolling plains and like cattle drives and Western culture, like cowboy culture, like Native Americans, that like the music that goes in along with that and the struggle and like the sparse, you know, landscapes. That's something that he was like, we can understand the Mona Lisa, but we can't understand being alone in the desert in Arizona.
Right.
And right. Looking for rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that just like made me, I was like, wow, I'm over here in Europe, like
freaking out. Yeah.
Begging to absorb all this culture and energy here in these countries.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm seeing the forest for the trees back in my home state, you know, in my home, you know? And so it was like, what does this album need to sound like? And that's really, you know, what I was intending for Westward was, you know, I just wanted it to sound like American music and not like patriotic in any way.
Right.
I didn't want it to be political in any way.
Right.
But I wanted it to have, you know, like elements of, you know, just like throwing your guitar case in the back of a truck and like fucking driving into the sunset and like seeing where you're going to go, or being, you know, alone and seeing the stars up in the mountains in the desert, for hours, or,
yeah,
you know, just that kind of idea of the American West, of like, you're going somewhere for the purpose of finding something within yourself. And
right.
If you stay out here and you stay with it and be alone long enough, you will find it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
as far as like, it's funny you mentioned the political thing, because I've noticed that there, I've seen a couple of people write, I feel like over the last 6 years, if someone were to write a song, and I've heard so many people's songs that they've written over the last few years, reflecting on the last few years, that are so specific,
sure,
that you realize like 20 years from now, this song won't mean anything to anyone really. I've heard a couple, yeah, people do it where you don't really know what you're listening to, and you can kind of apply the feeling or whatever theory of life they're trying to explain in the song, you can kind of apply it to other things rather than like 2016 through 2020 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like all of the,
sure,
the turmoil that went through that. Do you not enter that realm, or is there a reason why you don't? Is it because you just want your stories to be stories, not specific to this one thing?
I think the political things that I write are more humanitarian than anything.
Yeah.
It's like at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day, I couldn't give two fucks about either parties. Like I'm so over politics and just like,
yeah, yeah.
It is something that has stressed me out for years, and it's just like something that I'm learning to like let go of, and just you know, it's primarily humanitarian, you
That's
know,
great.
Like, and if you look at it, like Texas, that song, I mean, I had my hangups about, like, I was nervous to put out Texas because of all the shit that's going on right now with like the abortion laws and like Uvalde
right,
shootings
right,
and stuff. Is like, I mean, horrific things that are happening where, you know, freedom essentially is being torn away from, you know, the Americans that are supposed to be here to, and were born here to, like, you know, thrive in that. But as far as, like, you know, going on and, like, planting a flag, I think that the people of this nation have been so wildly separated, and the division is bigger than I've ever thought that it would be, and I just don't think I want to contribute to that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
I saw an interview with Barack Obama.
I will have. Oh.
Go ahead.
I do have, you know, if people have asked me about, you know, political views and stuff, and I love having private conversations with people about it, about certain things. But for me to go on and, like, separate my audience like that, I think they've all been through enough, and they should just, like, we should just listen to the music.
Yeah.
If they ever see me out and you want to ask me some questions, fucking awesome. Let's talk.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need to go into, like, the comments land on YouTube
of course,
or anything.
Of course. You know? Yeah. But, I mean, look, you know, I don't feel like, I feel like there's just so much music now that trying to get something that makes people feel better and lifts people in a way is far more important than throwing some shit that they've heard all day already in their face, you know, with a great drum beat.
Yeah. But even some of it, I can't even believe it's news. You're just like, how is this a fucking story? Yeah. How is this, like, why do people need to know this, like softball bullshit? Like, because it's 24 hours, they're just scrambling for anything.
That's why. You got to sell ads, you know, for 24 hours. You got to fill it up with shit.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, man, nobody gives a shit, you know, about, like, the petty stuff. But somehow it's just, like, wormed into our brains nonstop. So, you know, that song I put out last year, Highway, was specifically about that. And it was like, you know, the chorus is, you know, maybe I just need to go somewhere where I can't hear the highway. It was just like, I was hearing this nonstop static and, you know, just was relentless. And it was like, you know what, I'm going to go stare at a fire till the coals burn down at the top of the world where nobody's, you know, no one's around. It's like, go reconnect with. Go out and look at the stars. Turn your fucking phone off.
Yeah.
Go light a fire.
Yeah.
Go sit there and be quiet in the night and play a little guitar and like, you know, listen to what, you know, that inner person is trying to tell you, because, you know, you might be hearing so much static that, like, there might be something that you're trying, that your soul wants to say, and it doesn't have the chance to say it.
Exactly right.
You know, essentially 24-hour news is robbing that from you. So it's like, fucking check out. Go somewhere.
Are you a Bill Hicks fan? The comedian?
I do like him. Yeah.
I watched a thing when I had COVID a couple weeks ago. When you were saying that, I was like, oh, yeah, I actually, it's weird because this problem's been going on for a long time, because there's a stand-up album of his from, like, I want to say somewhere between 19, maybe it was after the Iraq, the first Desert Storm, 91 or something, maybe 91, 92 or something. But he talks about being on tour and just kind of, like, laying around his hotel and watching CNN. And even in 1991 or 1992, he was like, you watch it for long enough and you start getting, like, anxious, because you're like, fuck, AIDS, you know, the world's burning, you know, floods, tornadoes. Sure. And then you open the door, and it's just the world. Like, the birds are still chirping. Stuff's still going on. These people are just trying to scare the shit out of you so you won't stop watching, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, and I mean, I'm guilty of it, man. I'm guilty of it. You know, I check in on the news. I want to know what's going on. Like, scandals are juicy, and, you know, I enjoy a little cup of juice every now and again.
Who doesn't?
But it's at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, after a while, like I said, you know, you gotta, like, check in with yourself and, like, and go, dude, I don't need this shit. You know, like, I'm gonna purposefully, you know, t- turn this off for a little while, or I'm gonna go out with like my girl for the weekend and just gonna turn my phone off, like let my manager know that, hey, I'm going camping for the weekend, I don't want to talk to anybody, I'm going fishing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm gonna do, you know, or go somewhere no service and be like,
got no service.
If you need me, great. Yeah. I'll hit you when I get back. But you know, it's, I think those moments of clarity and quiet are more important than ever now, because I don't remember a time when we've been so constantly bombarded with senseless information, you know?
Yeah. And it's really fucking with people's mental health. Like, people are at their wits' end,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good time, man. That was one thing, even just moving out here to Lockhart, it's so quiet. And it's like, you know, from my old house, I could hear I-35 hammering night and day. Even in, you go to bed, you'd be in, you know, laying in your bed and you just, you know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how that static kind of like wears you down a little bit. And I mean, you know, moved out here is just, remember the first night, first morning we woke up in the new house and it was just like no cars, birds are chirping.
Yeah.
You open the door and it's just the world.
Yeah.
Know? Well, it's just a little quieter. And that's, you know, I think that's pretty priceless, you know.
That's great. Congratulations.
I got to recharge so I can go be a fucking rock star, you know?
yeah, exactly, man.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, man. This EP, A Couple, 2, 3, comes out on September 9th.
Yes.
That's when
September 9th.
Yeah. Are you doing any kind of like release show here or anything?
I'm actually going to be on the road for a couple months when it does come out. So October 10th is probably going to be at Sagebrush in Austin.
10th. Okay.
It's probably going to be the official, you know,
great.
Hey, we're going to play everything from the new EP and, you know, tear it up, you know?
Yeah. If I'm not playing, I'll be there. I'd love to see it. And I love that place, too. I love Sagebrush.
It's great. We filmed a video for Place Out Back there, and it looks amazing.
Oh, awesome.
So,
does that come out soon?
Yeah, it's September 9th.
Okay, great. That's when the video comes out?
Yeah.
All right. Well, dude, great job on this record, and congratulations, man. I'm really happy for you, and
thanks,
I'm really
buddy.
Proud of you. And I really kind of also expected it of you, because I feel like you're, like, you know, above average artist and performer.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, man. Everyone can find you at jonathanterrellmusic.com. A Couple, 2, 3 comes out September 9th. And just go to jonathanterrellmusic.com and find out when you're swinging through someone's town.
Yeah. Well, we got a bunch of tour dates, so come check out a show. Come get you a tie dye shirt and
hell yeah,
you know, do it up.
Do it up. Well, man, congratulations on everything. It's great catching up with you, and hopefully
you too,
I'll see you out there soon.
Go. You will, brother.
All right, my man. Take care, buddy.
Breeze right through it.
That was Jonathan Terrell. You're hearing his song Texas there. Get out there and check it out. It's out now as a single. You can find him at jonathanterrellmusic.com. Get involved there. His EP, A Couple, 2, 3, drops September 9th on Range Music, distributed by Virgin Records. I want to congratulate Jonathan on just all the great stuff he's been doing, touring with Midland and all that stuff. Jonathan, amazing artist, great dude, fantastic, fantastic hang. I love talking to that guy. Hey, gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out jonathanterrellmusic.com, you can subscribe to this podcast on any place you find podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Probably next week there's going to be 3 shows because we've got a lot of shows dropping. I've got a lot of people coming on. Adrian Quesada is coming on next week. And of course, episode 1200 on Friday with the legendary, most prolific bass player in rock, Rudy Sarzo. And I will be talking. I'm so excited about that, y'all. I'm freaking out. Seriously. I hope you enjoyed this Jonathan Terrell conversation. Go see him at jonathanterrellmusic.com. You guys have a great week, whatever it is you're doing, and I'll talk to you on Friday. Let's get down.
We'll take you just the way you are. So if you're tired of gunning and running down those fences, come on, oh, oh. To Texas. Well, they say less is more, I guess more or less. We got more out here than you know. So swing by in the spring, where the blue bonnets grow. Sleep by campfires glow. Well, I seen the seven wonders and a roadside bar, and I've heard an angel sing with a steel guitar. So if you're feeling lost, feeling lonely like something's missing, come on home to Texas. Come on home to Texas. Yeah, if you're feeling lost, feeling lonely like something's missing, come on home to Texas. Come on home to Texas one more time. Come on home.